You're with Brian McClain and Timothy Shea and State of the Nation on today's News Talk TNT.
Hello and welcome to State of the Nation. We are live right here at today's News Talk. TNTRadio.live is our website. We got a bunch of people over there in the chat room. If you'd like to join them, go to the website. There's a little icon in the lower right side, so you can hop in there, drop some links, say hi to us. Who knows? You might even catch my or Timothy's attention. I'm Brian McClain, broadcasting live out of Central Texas, and I'm here with Timothy Shea out of New York. Timothy, welcome to State of the Nation. How you doing today?
I'm doing great, Brian. How are you?
Oh, you know, never had it so good. Let's see here. The Senate killed articles of impeachment against open borders Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas, breaking 227 years of congressional history. So Democrats voted along party lines on the first article of impeachment, which charges Mayorkas with willful and systemic refusal to comply with the law, finding the charge unconstitutional. And there we go. So this DOA on arrival, pretty much as we expected, Timothy.
This is what makes me insane. The Democrats do with impunity what the Republicans will not scruple to do. This is exactly what I said Mitch McConnell needed to do with impeachment 1.0 in early 2020. Don't give it a hearing. Don't give it the time of day. Do not dignify it by holding a trial. It was garbage. This one is real. You know, Mayorkas is clearly systemically not complying with the law. So Democrats get away with not having a trial for a legitimate impeachment, but Republicans hold a trial for an illegitimate impeachment. It makes me nuts. This is why I hate Republicans.
It's really bad. It's really bad. I'm getting to the point where I almost don't even want to click on any news articles about what's going on in Congress, because clearly it's falling apart. The small, tiny victory that we had in 2022, the one nice thing conservatives and patriots got was the House, and it has done nothing but stab them in the back. So, Timothy, I see... you look like a porcupine when you turn around. I see more of those conservative blades sticking out of your back.
You know what I want to get? I want to get a Born to Ride t-shirt made up for every congressman, every Republican congressman, except for the handful, a couple dozen that are worth their salt. And I wanted to say, instead of Born to Ride, Born to Cave.
I like that. I like that. That would be a good one. They should actually tattoo that on their forehead.
I was just gonna say, for them. You know, great a little minds. Face with a couple with tears, a tear instead of everybody they've killed. Every time they've stabbed us in the back, they get a tear tattoo.
Right. Yeah. Every time they've taken a little shred of our Constitution and done something heinous to it, they should be branded for that. Definitely. Now, I'm going to bring our first guest in a moment here, but I really want to rattle this one off real quick. One Kylie Marissa Roth, age 36, a famous TikTok personality, famed for her explosive celebrity gossip and Hollywood exposés, has been confirmed dead by her family. So one of the parents says, my daughter Kaylee has passed away. She touched some of your lives personally and some of your lives via her immense life on another platform. Kaylee loved her family, lived fiercely, et cetera, et cetera. People are starting to wonder if there's something afoot here, because she has done exposés on Oprah, Jennifer Lopez, and Diddy. So it's definitely got people's tinfoil hats getting a little bit thicker. So I just wanted to shout that out in case there's a there.
Well, you know, you got to ask all the questions, right? Because her TikTok channel was, she used to read the exposés from Crazy Days and Nights, all of the hidden drops, the little puzzles that you got to figure out. She was spilling the tea on all of Hollywood, but was she jabbed? You don't know. So these days you have to ask all the questions. Yeah. Something definitely is sus.
I agree. Hey, don't miss out on a thing. Be sure and download our TNT app from either the Apple App Store or Google Play, so you can easily watch or listen to us anywhere, anytime. Grab the app. It's really cool. I keep it in the car, Bluetooth it to my stereo. It's available to download right now over there in the Apple App Store and Google Play. So that'll keep you up to speed on today's News Talk TNT.
Q.
keeping the commitment 24/7.
I come to you for facts. I really appreciate what you and your team do.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Gavin Wax is a New York-based conservative activist, commentator, columnist, and operative. He's the co-author of The Emerging Populist Majority. And he joins us now to discuss, you know, the Trump cases, the Trump lawsuits, $400 million plus bonds. My goodness. And we'll, hopefully we'll have some time to talk about some of the events going on in New York City as well. Gavin, welcome to State of the Nation. Wonderful to see you. We got a lot going on this week we can talk about, but let's start with the Trump lawsuits. What are you tracking right now?
Listen, I think this trial in Manhattan is a mockery of our justice system. It's a kangaroo court, as most, I think, honest Americans see it. We're seeing a prosecution that on a crime that has no victim and it's never been prosecuted before. It's a novel legal theory where they're claiming that he committed a conspiracy to further an underlying crime, but they never cite what that crime is. So it's a total nonsensical thing that would never be brought to trial if your last name was not Trump. And even if you accept the prosecution's claims in this New York City misdemeanor trial, it's still past the statute of limitations. So the whole thing is a joke. The judge is incredibly biased, and he's trying to stack this jury against the president. He's trying to isolate the president, keep him stuck in New York City so he's not on the campaign trail. I think that's a direct form of political and electoral interference on behalf of this judge and prosecution. So the whole thing's a sham. I think this is the only trial we're going to see before the election. It'll probably drag on for some time, maybe 8 weeks, and then there'll be an appeal process that'll go on beyond the election. Everything else has sort of become background noise. All the federal cases are kind of withering away. You have stuff before the Supreme Court on presidential immunity, but this is the real thing up now that the civil case is done. And you mentioned that $400 million disgorgement. That's the technical term, which is usually used to, basically a victim of a Ponzi scheme, for example. You could get a restitution, and then this money from this Ponzi scheme, whatever's left, is distributed to the victims. But there is no victim in the civil case. They claimed that he overvalued his properties, even though he got loans and the banks were repaid and the bank said there was no issue. So this money is going straight to the state of New York, straight into the coffers of Kathy Hochul. So I think this disgorgement is a way to mask the fact that this civil penalty that he was facing, something, again, an unheard of number, something that no one has ever seen before, that number was basically just punitive, and it was a way to get around the Eighth Amendment. So we have a lot of issues at hand legally and judicially in this country. We definitely need some reform. We need to clean up the systems, but our institutions are failing, and this stuff against the president is just reflective of that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what's at risk here if these institutions continue to crumble like this? I mean, I'm already seeing so many Americans feeling like, hey, the institutions have crumbled. They're done. They're gone. There's no justice left in the justice system. So, I mean, aside from that being the current state, and maybe I'm overstating that, I don't know what you think about that, but I mean, what's at stake if this kind of lawfare continues?
Well, listen, I don't think you're overstating it. I think you're stating a plain fact. I think trust and, social cohesion has collapsed in this country. We're no longer a high trust society. We're no longer a society that, values our institutions, reveres, our institutions and our form of government like we once did maybe 20, 30, 40 years ago. We always thought that we had, the best system in the world, the best protections, the best, judicial, legal, et cetera. That's all going by the wayside now. And we're seeing Democrats, play a very dangerous game, a very dangerous political game here, where they're using brute political force to push through their own partisan agenda at whatever cost. It doesn't mean if they're destroying, centuries old norms and common law. It doesn't matter if they're completely, tearing apart the fabric of our society and splitting the country in two. They don't care. They have one thing on their mind, and that's power. And that's the consolidation of power. That's expanding their own power. And you see on the other side of the aisle, frankly, you know, the right, Republicans, conservatives, however you want to describe it, they just don't have that same fight in them. And they're not willing to go into this gunfight with a gun. They're going in there with a knife, and we keep losing. So I would make the argument, maybe it's a little cynical, maybe some people wouldn't appreciate it, but I think it's the only real answer to the left's transgression, is that if they're going to go full lawfare, then we need to go full lawfare. You know, we have plenty of attorney generals that are in these trifecta Republican states where many senior Democrats and other major liberals live and operate. You know, they have plenty of things that could be gone after if the new standard is being set with these Trump trials and these Trump cases. So I think the only way you're going to stop the left is if you show them that it could be reciprocal. And until that day comes, they're going to continue to push this. They see the weakness of Republican leadership. They see the weakness and fecklessness of Republican elected officials who never want to take the fight to them. So they say, well, what's the worst that could happen? We control the apparatus of the state. We control the federal government. We control these local jurisdictions like New York. So they're going to, you know, just beat us to a pulp. And they know that the Republicans on the other side are too scared to do the same in return. If that reciprocity is gone, sad to say that this is just going to continue. And it's also going to continue in a sense that it's not going to just be President Trump who's facing this sort of stuff. It's going to be anyone, any Joe Schmo on the street who puts out a tweet that they don't like, or puts out a blog, a post, or a video or something. We've seen this in Europe, where they've arrested people for free speech. They've arrested people across Europe for any kind of attacks on political correctness or the political orthodoxy here. That's coming to the United States very soon. This is just the testing grounds that we're seeing right now.
Kevin, you're absolutely correct. We were just talking about how the Republicans need to have tattooed on their foreheads, not born to ride, but born to cave. They are weak-kneed, lily-livered, spineless milquetoasts that play by self-imposed Marquis of Queensbury rules. When they're in a street fight, they don't even show up to a gunfight with a knife. They arrive barehanded and on their knees. It's, as a native New Yorker, it just blows my mind, because the only way to defeat force is with superior, overwhelming force. And that's what we need to do.
Could not agree with you more.
Yeah, Chuck Schumer did today with impunity what Mitch McConnell should have done in 2020, not even give a hearing. This impeachment, however, was legitimate. Mayorkas is actually guilty of the crimes for which he was impeached. Trump wasn't. And yet Mitch had to respect the process. It's maddening.
Yeah, they hide behind that kind of, you know, they hide behind the norms and the processes when it gives them a convenient excuse to actually do something. So they don't have to do anything. They could just hide behind these norms and these traditions. Oh, we've never done this before. Meanwhile, when the Democrats and the radical left violate every norm that we've ever had, violate every process, you know, completely, you know, spit in the face of the Constitution, spit in the face of our judicial system, spit in the face of everyday Americans, then all of a sudden they're silent. So again, it's just very convenient for them when they choose to grow a backbone and when they choose to not. And frankly, they rarely have a backbone when it comes to anything, for that matter. And it's sad. It's sad to see, because I think if the left was ever challenged, if anyone ever called out their bluff, they'd be folding. But they've never seen any sort of leadership. They've never seen any sort of real resiliency and fight, frankly, until President Trump, which is why they're throwing the entire kitchen sink at him. But yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, this is the age we're living in. And you may be very sad that this is what this country has come to, that we never used to be a country like this. It is what it is. Exactly. We had a national consensus once. That's in the drain. We had a national unity once. That's in the drain. So, you know, you can't blame me. You can't blame you for being the messengers. We're just trying to be real.
You know who I blame? I blame the holier than thou people who don't think that Donald Trump is presidential and clutching their pearls. And maybe I'll vote for him if he names warmonger Nikki Haley as his vice president.
Right.
These people right there are the problem.
Oh, I could not agree with you more. And that self-righteous shtick is getting very old, and it has no place in the day and age we're living in politically. I mean, we are really in some tough times, or tough times ahead. And if you don't like it, then you should have been complaining the last 20, 30 years as the country got this route. It didn't happen overnight. This was a slow progression over years, over generations. But now you got to wake up and you got to realize that we're in a different country. We're in a different state of affairs, and we need fighters. We need people who understand what time it is. We're going to rise to the occasion and punch back for once. And we don't have time for the self-righteous shtick. We don't have time for this, you know, moral superiority and sticking your nose up and just trying to go along to get along. All those types of viewpoints, in the trash, straight in the trash. They have no place anymore in the modern age of American politics, because if we want to win, we want to win elections, and we want to effectuate our policy agenda, we need real, you know, bare knuckle fighters. We need, you know, Teddy Roosevelt style men in the arena who are willing to, you know, fight the good fight. And there's nothing wrong with that. If you have, the principles on your side, if you're actually fighting a truly righteous cause, which I believe we are, for the heart and soul of this country, then you shouldn't be afraid or ashamed of getting your hands dirty a little bit and punching back. But I think too many people are just not ready for what's up ahead. And I think the left knows that. They understand that. These are very Machiavellian people, and they're taking advantage of that to the fullest extent possible.
Yeah, they absolutely are. Gavin, we're out of time. I want to encourage you to pick up The Emerging Populist Majority. And Gavin, where do you point people to find your work?
Thank you guys for having me. You can follow me at my website, Gavin Wax, gavinwax.com. You can follow me on X, Instagram, Facebook, at Gavin Wax, GAVINWAX. And thank you guys for having me. Looking forward to joining again.
All right. We'll be looking forward to it, too. Great discussion here with Gavin Wax on State of the Nation. Stay tuned. We got more coming up after these words from today's News Talk TNT.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. One reason people tune in to TNT Radio is often because they're loyal to a specific show or personality. Our personalities have been a part of people's daily routine, and people continue to tune in.
They trust TNT Radio
and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
Today's News Talk Radio.
Come on, let the man talk.
We never censor our hosts.
Good. Now, talk.
Uncensored news.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Our next guest is a 14-year NYPD veteran and the co-host of Roll Call on Rumble and the Sal Greco Show on YouTube. And Sal says the crime rate in New York City is breaking new records every day. With woke DAs and corrupt leadership, this is only expected to worsen over time. Welcome back to State of the Nation, our friend Sal Greco. Hey, Sal.
It's an honor to be here once again. And like I've been saying this for a while now, the crime rate is actually through the roof, probably not only just in New York City, but also in pockets all over the country. And it's the fact that these bail reform laws and how these woke DAs are, you know, they don't even process the crimes correctly. They don't even charge correctly. They undercharge things. They do. It's almost done on purpose, Tim. That's how I really feel about it.
This is absolutely done on purpose. And I'll tell you, as a native upstater who lived in the city twice, I love New York, both upstate and downstate. But we always said we should have a governor from upstate that can respect our viewpoints and do right by us. And we finally get one, the horrible Hochul, and she's as bad as any downstate governor we've had. The last four have gone to prison. That's how the boys in blue must feel about Eric Adams, one of your own. This guy's a mess.
Yeah, I was just telling you before we came on that there's just a new article now that his deputy mayor, his number one sidekick, Timothy Pearson, is in a second sexual harassment lawsuit. I'm seeing a pattern here. This administration, including the very upper echelon of the New York City Police Department, they have a sexual deviant problem where they're in a ton of lawsuits that involve either A, sexual harassment, or B, rape or sexual assault. Yet the city is covering them, which is illegal by the general municipal law 50K2. But somehow, you know, they're saying that they don't have to tell you why they're indemnifying them or representing them because it's attorney-client privilege. And it's not, because, Tim, when I was sued, the only time I was ever sued, I had to fill out the form and 50K2. And then they explained to me in a letter, which was not attorney-client privilege, why they represented me and indemnifying me, which they have the right to take away at any moment. So this is another knock on the administration, another lawsuit. You know, the other day you found out this woman that didn't have a job in the NYPD. She had an office and chief of, at the time, the borough chief, but now he's the chief of department, Jeffrey Madry. She was just in the office, and apparently she had a case where she was raped by someone that they either knew or know or was at a party with them, and they covered it up, and they went on a whole smear campaign. And it also involves the current chief of patrol, John Schell, and the deputy commissioner of operations, Kaz Daudrey, who are like BFFs with Eric Adams, and they have a campaign against the media right now. They're involved in that sexual harassment lawsuit or rape lawsuit. And it's just, it's a troubling trend, Tim, that like, I don't know why these people are A, still in their position of power, B, how does Eric Adams address this, and C, what does New York City feel where you don't feel safe, your public safety is in jeopardy every day in New York City. The administration is, you know, involved in all these deviant pleasures that they take on the side. And on top of that, we did see another article about our favorite nightclub in the Bronx, Con Sofrito, which is Eric Adams' favorite haunt and owned by the police commissioner's brother and managed by a mob associate, criminal, self-admitted criminal, who's best friends, it appears, with just about the entire New York State and city Democrat apparatus.
Yeah, that party room is still there, even though it's been ordered to be taken down. Sal, where's IAB? Where's Internal Affairs?
Internal Affairs was sponsoring a party at Con Sofrito on January 6th, which had all the police personnel there. The landlord brought that up. Yeah.
You can't make this up.
Yeah.
It's amazing. You know, Sal, I'm sitting here and, I'm listening to your update, and I'm thinking back to all our conversations over, the last year and a half, 2 years, whatever it's been. And it's just like this, when you put it all together and you kind of zoom out a little bit, it's like we're talking about an NYPD and a New York City political machine that are analog to some sort of mafia. And it's like, you know what I mean? Like, you think about the old mafia movies, you think about, we got the judge bought, we got the chief of police bought, you see these things and it's like, wow, how did things get this bad? But now this seems to just be the way that it is. And that leads me to my question, though. It seems to me that with all these things going on, if we had an actual media environment that, wanted to talk about what's happening in the country and inform the population, particularly the people in New York, the voters, that there would be just a series of endless open goal interviews to go talk to some of these women that have experienced this, to go talk to some of these people like yourself who have experienced lawfare and career damage. But I don't see any of that. I have to come to TNT. I have to go to your channel. I have to go to Stone Zone. There's some places I can go see this. But what's your message to the mass media about this as a whole, this whole ecosystem?
Well, that's why the media, I'm seeing a certain, like almost like a change in it. I still say they have the whole Trump derangement syndrome, but now they are trying to look into things with, corruption, Eric Adams. But the problem is certain publications, they're not budget anymore to do certain things. Like, you can FOIA request something, but guess what? That may not work. So you have to file an Article 78. You have to go to court, which costs money, which needs lawyers. And, certain publications, like let's say the New York Post or the Daily, they just don't want to do it anymore. They're not budgeted for it. So basically, media has become more independently run. Media works better because when you're out there, you have like me, a show on YouTube, or we have TNT Radio, or we have Badlands Media, or we have, other outlets that are not mainstream per se. They'll cover stuff like this. And that's where the audience is watching this right now. Is the majority of the people today, because they need to go to independent sources to even hear this, because stuff like this would lead you to believe. I don't think a New York City resident right now, if they knew everything that we're stating here right now, that they wouldn't go out there and vote, not for Eric Adams, but against him. They wouldn't want Alvin Bragg as their DA. They wouldn't want Letitia James, who's sitting there with the manager of Con Sofrito, sitting there at an event with him taking pictures. So she clearly knows him, and he's a criminal.
You're absolutely right. These people, they don't know. And if they do know, they give them Bronx raspberry, right? We got an incoming headline, but we're going to be back for more on the situation in my beloved town, NYC, right after these headlines from today's News Talk, TNT.
Here we go again.
All right, let's go.
Go. Yes.
TNT Radio News.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. A federal judge ruled that Mark Zuckerberg, CEO of Meta Platforms Incorporated, will not face personal liability in 25 legal complaints alleging that Facebook and Instagram, which are owned by Meta, harm children. Dubai and other parts of the United Arab Emirates have experienced unprecedented rainfall, leading to widespread disruptions and at least one death. Belgian police blocked the entrance to the NatCon conference in Brussels, preventing attendees, including key speaker Eric Zemmour, from entering.
We're the pinup boys and poster girls for free speech. We just don't look as impressive as Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse. Yeah. 24/7, 365, we never stop sifting fact from fiction,
misinformation from the truth.
From government overreach to the latest on mandates, big tech censorship to propaganda gone mad, listen to TNT Radio and get the news and views direct from our expert presenters and commentators anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's News Talk, this is TNT Radio.
You know, Sal, I'm no neophyte. I lived in New York during the Koch and the Dinkins administrations. My first trip in 1976 was in the middle of a garbage strike. And New York is the toughest city in the country to run. It's the largest. It's the most complicated, both politically and administratively. Mm-hmm. But Rudy Giuliani showed that it could be done. Day one, the squeegee boys were gone from all the tunnels and bridge on-ramps, right? So you weren't getting your car smashed if you didn't slide them a 10 after they squeegeed your windshield. All of the little street crime, the property crimes, the graffiti, everything else, the stop and frisk policy worked. Rudy had the town running. And Bloomberg kept it running. It amazes me how quickly things went right back to the mid-70s.
Well, I was actually on the job on the Bloomberg, and the focus then was quality of life issues. Also, we called broken windows policing, which is how we do something small, and we made sure you cut it off before it stems into something large. The problem here, though, was not only the shift in policy, which was under Bill de Blasio, now under the nightlife mayor, Eric Adams, but the woke DAs that came in changed the legislation and how they would go about things. Also, how court cases are. Of course, we have bail reform, which is a revolving door now of people that are recidivists just keep coming back out after they commit the crimes. There was also the discovery laws that put in place. So when I was when I had an arrest of someone, you had 15 days as a prosecutor to give the defense all the discovery. Sometimes an officer will go on vacation, your partner, they need all that, the other officer's memo book or whatever he wrote, and he's gone. And now that case could be dismissed on one technicality. And he can't even ask for an extension. So these are things that behind the scenes happen that, you know, kind of helped us along on what you're seeing today in New York City. It's a collective process here, Tim. It's not just the police department. It's not just Eric Adams. You have woke DAs, and let's not forget legislators, city council, the state assembly, the state senate, the governor.
Your borough presidents.
The borough president, and even the SLA, because unfortunately we noticed one thing. They all love the party at Concertfrito. That's the one common trend I found with all these people.
What is it with that place? What goes on there? I mean, do we have is there a fly on the wall that can report for us? I mean, it sounds really shady, to be quite honest.
It's like the Bergen Hunt and Fish Club for the Democrats.
Correct. That's what it is. You know, the allegations that we hear, they're kind of disturbing. So for one is you have these straw donor fundraisers they had, because the king of the fundraisers is actually Carl Hasty, I think he lives there. He's been spotted there so many times. And he brings his lobbyist pal, Patrick Jenkins, who's pictured with Jimmy Rodriguez, the manager of Concertfrito. So they're there all the time. And then you see a pack of people underneath them, city councilmen. They call them pop-up parties, or they're just partying there. Yeah. So we don't know. There could be free drinks, free food. There's cash money. Then you have the criminal aspect where the guy is a manager who is a mob associate and a supplemented criminal. Then we have other criminals that you could easily spot, like the rapper, Fat Joe. You have Eric B., Peter Guns. These guys are hardcore criminals. We're not talking about how the police department stated Roger Stone is a felon. I'm talking about these guys were involved in selling drugs, selling guns. They're street guys. This is street level criminals that walk in there. And here they are, you know, hobnobbing with these elected officials. And then Letitia James in the Bronx DA, Darso Clark, are standing right there. So how do you, I mean, the appearance of impropriety here alone with just that aspect. And then the other allegations that always have followed the manager there, because he owned a place called Jimmy's Bronx Cafe, which for years was notorious for murders and drug deals. And there was a federal investigations. Would that in itself would lead you to believe this place, with all these allegations you're hearing and people that come out and say these things, why is there no federal investigation? Because obviously the state and the city cannot look into this. And Tim, we mentioned that article, right? The very end that said the state liquor authority said that they actually said that they were opening an investigation, but yet now that it's closed, they can't tell you the results of this investigation and the six public meetings they had as far as any agenda, anything they spoke about. Not once have they spoken about Concerfrito. They still have a liquor license to this day, even though they were deemed a public safety hazard with that party shed and the fact that it was a fire trap from the fire department hitting with 20 violations. You were literally endangering the public. So the owner should be charged with reckless endangerment. But you have to ask yourself, what's going on here, Tim? And how is the SLA, which is a quasi-public agency for the state, why are they stonewalling not only the media, but the public who they have to be held accountable to?
I think we all know why. The fix is in, clearly. And what's their excuse going to be? Well, we couldn't get a table at Rayo's, so we had to get our own place.
Right. Yeah, they didn't call Bo Deedle, another guy who just came out of the blue yesterday. They say, first of all, Bo Deedle, he donates money to Eric Adams, okay? Then he also has like real estate interests. So he brings the real estate interest in front of Eric Adams, his buddy. And now he's in charge of or he's the private eye on his legal defense fund. Because, you know, we have all the straw donors that are occurring there, like almost the tsunami of straw donors that has come out of Eric Adams' campaigns is enormous. And you just wonder when or how are they going to come down on him? You know, when?
Now you're on it. It's all about the scroll.
Yep. With him, that's all it's about. Like Eric Adams once said, he came to the state Senate, first speech he gave, and he says, show me the money. Show me the money. That was his first line. That's all Eric Adams really is. He's a high-level street guy. You elected in New York City a high-level street guy that bamboozles you with a lot of fancy words, which he learned under Al Sharpton and Louis Farrakhan. Nobody did any research. Everyone there basically said, oh, well, he's a nice guy because he was a former cop and, you know, there weren't really any allegations against him, which now you're hearing that there was plenty of allegations against him when he was in the NYPD. He was never a squeaky clean guy, but they never bothered asking a guy like me who worked on the job to say, hey, what's going on with that Eric Adams? Should we be electing him to office? Basically,
well, that's why we have you here at State of the Nation. We got to get you back again soon because these 20 minutes go by way too fast. The Cell Greco on X, and definitely check out Roll Call on Rumble and The Cell Greco Show on YouTube. Sal, thanks so much for coming back to State of the Nation. We've got more right here on today's News Talk, TNT.
When a crisis hits, close to home and across the globe, nonprofits are on the front lines, ready to serve.
Keep coming.
The demand for charitable services has skyrocketed, and nonprofits are rising to meet the needs. Healing. Nurturing. Rescuing. Honoring. Protecting. Caring. Inspiring. The work of philanthropic organizations of all sizes, across all missions, has never been more important. And it's donors and volunteers like you who make all this possible. Thank you. Together, we change the world. The Nonprofit Alliance.
One scorching heat wave will leave me powerless to cool my insulin.
When the storm rolls in, my time to find a pet-friendly evacuation center will have run out.
I'm relying on luck, but who knows if it'll be on my side.
When it comes to disasters and emergencies, it's not a matter of if, but when. Take control. One, assess your needs. Two, make a plan. Three, engage your support network. Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell.
Interviews, news, and views. You're listening to State of the Nation with Timothy Shea and Brian McLean on today's News Talk, TNT.
At the University of Tennessee, the campus DEI program is now called the Division of Access and Engagement. Louisiana State University also rebranded its diversity office after Jeff Landry, a Trump-backed Republican, was elected governor last fall. Its Division of Inclusion, Civil Rights, and Title IX is now called the Division of Engagement, Civil Rights, and Title IX. I guess that used to be the DEI, but now we go with that. And at the University of Oklahoma, the diversity office is now the Division of Access and Opportunity. What is going on here? Joining us now to talk about this is attorney, science teacher, and New York Times bestselling author of 15 books, Kent Heckenlively, joins us once again on State of the Nation. Kent, it's great to see you. Welcome back to the show. So DEI has really kind of turned into a bad word for a lot of Americans, and I guess the university systems think they can skirt that by simply changing around some acronyms. What's your take on this?
This is a wonderful time for mockery in the United States, and we should mock DEI out of existence. We don't need to get flustered. We don't need to sweat. We don't need to yell. We just need to mock. This stuff is so incredibly stupid. I think one of the best examples of how stupid supposedly smart people can be is the recent interview with Mark Cuban, where somebody was talking to him about DEI means equality of outcome. And he kept going, no, it means everybody gets the same opportunity. No, that's not what it means. And a lot of commentators have said, well, here's the stupid thing that happens that everybody who's actually been in business understands. If you're a manager and you tell your employee, hey, let's improve diversity in this unit. And the guy says, well, your underling says, well, what do you want me to do? Do you want me to fire all the white people? Oh, no, 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 no. I just want you to expand the opportunity. And so, you know, 6 months later, he comes back and they say, well, how's your diversity? And the guy says, I've given opportunity to so many people. Well, what happened to that? Well, none of them worked out. And so the guy says, well, you didn't do your job. So the next thing that happens is the guy doesn't get his bonus because he hasn't increased the diversity. So what is it that needs to be done? Well, the underling learns he needs to fire the people who are not the approved minority and hire the approved minority. And what happens is you get somebody who's not qualified to do the job. We're seeing that happen time and time again. And so we just need to mock DEI out of existence.
Well, we're doing
doesn't it stand for delusion, elitism, and intolerance, or is that discrimination and indoctrination?
Discrimination, exclusion, and intolerance. That's what I say it stands for.
There you go.
It's basically racism by another name.
Absolutely. And, you know, we just need to just keep pushing because look at what happened with those three university heads who testified before Congress. They were saying that they could not bring themselves to condemn, you know, calls for genocide in Israel. And what happened is they lost their jobs. And when you just force people to say the truth, when you force them out into the light to defend their ideals. They can't do it. The people see through it, and we get change.
Well, you know, this is become a big problem in universities. We could also reference some of the female athletes that have gone around and talked about their experience as swimmers and such. And, you know, we've seen those people be attacked. We've seen them literally have to hide in closets sometimes in universities. And I always, when I see something like that, I always think, boy, we never saw this before DEI became, you know, sacrosanct inside of the university systems. But it's not just that. It's like the amount of, you know, cultural pressure that is put on, you know, people in colleges in particular, sort of radicalizes them, very much radicalizes them in some cases. So, I mean, and that could get worse. That could easily get worse. I mean, we could look at, you know, Mao's China as an example of like where that logically ends up in the worst case.
One of the things that I think we need to do as conservatives is we need to fight these crazy ideas the way you would fight a martial arts match. Okay, you don't accept, you don't just take the blow. You accept it and you redirect it. Here's the redirect that I would do. I would use the diversity word all the time. And I'd use it in the same way that that NPR executive did, where he said, I looked at 87 people in our newsroom and not a single one of them was a Republican or conservative. That's not diversity. That's the kind of diversity that we need to be talking about. We need to use the language of the left against them, because what's going to happen is they are so intolerant. We need to use their own language against them to show the public they are the intolerant ones.
Right, right. Absolutely. You know, and this extends into the corporate realm, too. Reading from Reuters here, diversity, equity and inclusion incentives in corporate America are facing an onslaught of criticism, especially after the Supreme Court's decision in Students for Fair Admission v. Harvard. Of course, that ruling didn't address companies' DEI programs, but in striking down affirmative action in higher education, it has heightened legal scrutiny in the corporate realm. And I hear from a lot of friends and people that watch the show that they experience this in their corporate headquarters, you know, people getting forced to do DEI training, and not just the kind where you click through a PowerPoint and say, yeah, I watched it, like almost like a struggle session where they have to sit down at a round table and be asked questions. And if they don't answer them in line with DEI, I think it should be called DIE, but, you know, it can ruin someone's career. It can put them in a very uncomfortable position. It can ruin their, you know, path to advancement. What are you seeing in the corporate realm, or how does what happens in the colleges bleed into the corporate realm and make that even worse?
Well, it certainly does bleed into the corporate realm. And so what we've seen with things like the nuttiness that Mark Cuban is espousing is we're seeing that. But here's something that I think needs to be added to the conversation. Men are uniquely resilient. You throw us out of the tribe, we're going to figure out how to create our own tribe, a better tribe, and we're going to come back and we're going to decimate you. This is what men just need to be. They need to have the courage to stand up. If they're going to get kicked out, get kicked out. Because what men do is they figure out solutions. They build another company and they will get like-minded people around them. And so I just say, bring it on. Have that fight. Don't have the fear. Be, you know, and in your discussions, be respectful with the other side. I mean, I'm never about being disrespectful, but raise the issues, push it, you know, and just have the courage to say things like, well, you know, did I mention that my brother-in-law is an employment attorney and that, you know, if I feel that this is an unsafe environment for me, he tells me I have a case, you know, use their own terror tactics against them.
Yeah, now you're singing a song that speaks to my Irish soul, right? I was using the Defy Don't Comply hashtag very early on in 2020 with all the nonsense. And as for not being disrespectful, okay, but I'm not above a little sarcasm, Kent.
Oh, 100%. See, this is what we need to do. We need to figure out what our strengths are, okay? So guys, and especially conservatives, we have a fantastic sense of humor. We understand irony, and we have to use that because, you know, a lot on the left are powerless against humor and irony. They're humorless, sad individuals. And so if we can be the ones laughing in the conversation, asking questions, well, we're going to get the audience on our side.
Well, I didn't get 31 30-day bans on Facebook by going along to get along. Let's just leave it at that.
Yeah, 100%.
One of my favorite DEI ribbings and embarrassments that we did on the show recently was talking about the FAA. The FAA put something out that was so ridiculous. It was like they went to the oppression Olympics, the oppression Special Olympics, and they wrote down every classification of person you could possibly imagine, right? So, you know, we were talking about it on the show, and I said, hey, wait a minute, you guys, I support the rights of paraplegic, dwarf, blind, deaf, mute people to fly our planes. If we don't do this, certainly we're going to all go to HE double hockey sticks. Of course, you know, drenched in sarcasm. But I mean, it's almost like they've gone too far with this stuff. They set us up for that open goal. Really fun conversation and bit of sarcasm to have in public. But, you know, when we really look at it, it's like, what are you actually trying to say? The FAA is, I mean, you know, let's just clear the deck and say blind. The FAA wants to hire blind people? Like, why? As a virtue signal? I mean, I'm not saying there's no positions for a blind person somewhere in, you know, the aviation industry. But the way that they put that out to the public, I felt like was sort of, you know, a nudge, a knee to the crotch, if you will.
Well, here's what we're missing as a society. That right there, Brian, would have made a perfect sketch on In Living Color, right? They would have had a blind flight attendant trying to push a cart and spilling drinks all over the passengers. And they would have used ridicule to point out how ridiculous it is. But we don't have comedy anymore. We no longer have the Joker allowed to be the one to tell the truth to the king.
We need to push the absurdity. That's why in this whole sort of trans madness, I think that, you know, the approach of conservatives should have been, well, look, we knew this all along that men were better than women at sports. Yeah. You know, any man can beat any woman in weightlifting. Yeah. You know, do the absurd thing, which is like, yeah, a male runner can always beat a female runner. I knew that men were always better than women. You know, push the absurdity. You need to push the absurdity.
Toward that point, the year that Jackie Joyner Kersee set the women's Olympic record in 100 meters, over 80 high school boys beat her time.
Yeah.
That's a historical fact.
Yeah, and we always hear these things like, you know, the women's Olympic team got beat by some college men's team. You know, we hear these things, and it is so absurd that you know, society did this wonderful thing carving out niches for women to succeed, because I genuinely believe that, you know, I'm sorry, male and female psychology is different. And the average female questions herself more than the average male. And I think that sports is such a great thing to develop confidence in young women. And the fact that we are destroying it by letting these trans men, women, whatever you want to call them, compete, it is just a mockery of true equality. And I think
you have to wonder whether this is just a little bit of karma, because Title IX was inherently unfair. My college lost a championship baseball team and a championship swimming and diving team because we had a football team and they implemented Title IX by the numbers. Well, male teams have more players than female teams. So if you want to have the equal number of athletes, you got to cut some male sports. Maybe this is just a little wheel turning, unfortunately.
Yeah, you know, anytime government gets involved in things, I know they're going to mess it up. So, you know, my apologies to your college for that being done by Title IX. You know, we have to what the left seems to be engaged in is shutting up conservative voices. And we just can't accept that. We cannot allow ourselves to be pushed off the stage. We got to take the stage. We're not stealing the microphone from anybody else. We're just demanding equal time.
Yeah. Back to equality of opportunity, which was the original scaffolding, the original design. You got something to say? Say it. Who cares what you look like? Say it. We want to hear it. And if we don't want to hear it, well, it's, you know, our obligation to turn the other way and listen to something else. And, you know, we're just about out of time here, Kent, but, you know, when I look at the University of Oklahoma, when I look at Tennessee and I see them changing the name, you can't just change the name of DEI. You're not fooling anybody with that. So we'll take your final comments and be sure and lay out where people can find your work here.
Yeah, so I just think that DEI will die a mercifully mocked death. I think that's wonderful. You can find my work at kenthackenlivelybooks.com. I'm on Twitter. I have a new book out just this Tuesday. It's a historical fiction novel called The King of Italy. It's getting dynamite reviews. If you want a little break from the political stuff and you want to dive into some history, go get a copy of The King of Italy.
All right. And we recommend you do that because breaks from news are important. As much as we want you here 24/7 at Today's News Talk, you got to take care of yourself too. So be sure and do that. Pick up Kent's book. Kent Heckenlively, thank you so much for joining us here on State of the Nation. Always an informative conversation, thought-provoking, and we'll look forward to having you back on the show again real soon.
Thanks a lot, Brian.
All right. That's Kent Heckenlively, everybody, live right here on Today's News Talk, TNT. Stay tuned.